The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer and the Washington Post. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we are going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Over the past couple of decades, we have seen the growth of planned communities. These often are gated and include amenities like golf courses, tennis courts, and walking trails. They also have limits. Some do not permit children. Some require that you be at least 55 or older. Some make you park your car and then use a golf cart to get around. What's the attraction to all this? That's what Washington Post writer Michelle Lerner wanted to find out. Her article, Rural Life Beckons Baby Boomers to Arizona Community, appeared in the April 16, 2021 weekend extra edition of the News and Observer. Let's see what she learned. When Brian and Jasmine Jones spent a stay-and-play weekend at the planned community of Wickenburg Ranch, a trilogy resort community in Wickenburg, Arizona, they knew immediately they had found their future retirement home. In that pre-pandemic time, the couple was assigned an ambassador to show them around, introduce them to people, and answer questions. Brian was hooked from the moment he played the Big Wick golf course. When Jasmine suggested looking at Wickenburg Ranch, I questioned why we would look way out there, practically off the grid, says Brian, a 62-year-old internal auditor for Court Furniture. But the golf courses are great, and the area is beautiful. So we fell in love with it right away. The planned community of Wickenburg Ranch, which is about one-half sold out, will have approximately 1,500 to 1,600 homes when it's complete in 2 to 3 years. The company, or rather the community, is what is known as a naturally occurring retirement community, with most of the residents age 55 and older. The majority of the neighborhoods are age-targeted, with one-level homes that have 2 or 3 bedrooms and a location that appeals to retirees, pre-retirees, and winter visitors, says Chris Haynes, president of VT Land Group, the developer of Wickenburg Ranch. We also have a few age-restricted neighborhoods where the homeowners must be 55 or older. The pandemic-related isolation pushed many baby boomers to speed up their moving plans, says Deborah Blake, principal of the Ipsum Group, a researcher on people ages 55 and older, and a real estate consultant in Phoenix. Baby boomers want out of their big single-family homes into a smaller place without steps, and the pandemic caused a lot of people to decide not to wait to downsize their home and upsize their life, Blake says. The isolation from their friends, family, and grandkids made them want to make the most of their time and accelerate their plans. Plus, with millennials eager to move to larger suburban homes, low mortgage rates, and rising home prices, more baby boomers were motivated to sell. Arizona has always been a popular retirement destination because of its weather and low cost of living, Haynes says. About one-third of the buyers at Wickenburg Ranch are from California, Haynes says. The real estate prices are significantly lower here, along with taxes and utilities. Another one-third come from the Pacific Northwest and the Midwest, especially from Chicago. The other one-third are from Arizona. People who move from California often have significant cash from the sale of their home, especially if they owned it for decades, Blake says. In 2020, approximately 60,000 Californians moved to Arizona. California buyers tend to spend a lot on upgrading their homes with optional features and are willing to spend extra on a lot of premiums, too, said Blake. A big appeal for most residents at Wickenburg Ranch, which began as a dude ranch owned by entertainer Merv Griffin, is the rural location. There's a small-town atmosphere here, but you can find anything you need in town, says Jasmine, 58, who works for Asa Abloy, an electronics company. Most people who move here like getting away from the hustle and bustle of cities and larger towns. Wickenburg Ranch is located about 70 miles from downtown Phoenix and 75 miles from Phoenix Sky Harbor International Airport. Blake says residents can drive to destinations in Phoenix within 45 to 90 minutes, to Mexico and Las Vegas in 3 hours, and to mountains for skiing in 90 minutes. Rural and small-town locations have become increasingly popular during the pandemic among people who can work remotely or who are retired. An analysis by the National Association of Realtors found that the share of homes purchased in a suburb, small town, rural, or resort area rose to 85% in the fall of 2020, compared with just 15% purchasing in a city. About one-third of buyers at Wickenburg Ranch lived in rural locations prior to coming here, Blake says. The others, who come from a mix of urban and suburban locations, say they're happy to get away from the traffic and congestion. When sales opened in the community in 2014, it was seen as a kind of podunk town, Blake says. Now the town of Wickenburg has become hip and trendy with art studios, a performing arts center, and more restaurants, Blake says. Wickenburg is known as the team roping capital of the world, says Haynes, and hosts a variety of events and festivals such as a bluegrass festival and Gold Rush Days, a 70-year-old tradition that celebrates ranching and the gold mining history of the town. The homes and amenities in Wickenburg Ranch are designed to complement the style of the small western town. The sales center is a ranch house with a bar and views of the walking trails, a golf course, and desert landscape. Community amenities include 5 restaurants, a clubhouse with a spa, fitness center, and an art barn for classes. Also tennis courts, bocce ball courts, pickleball courts, and 2 golf courses. The amenities are open to everyone in the community, Haynes says, because most residents here are 55 and older. We don't have separate amenities for the active adult neighborhoods. Homeowner association fees are $130 per month, and mandatory club dues are $180 per month. New residents pay a $6,000 social initiation fee. Optional golf membership, which is separate from the social club, has a $30,000 initiation fee and costs $350 per month. The golf courses, which are managed by Troon Golf, are a big draw for many residents. Our golf membership at Wickenburg Ranch gives us privileges to get tee times at Troon-managed golf courses, which are some of the nicest courses all over the world, Jasmine says. Brian particularly likes the 9-hole Little Wick course, which the couple sometimes play on their lunch hour. The 9-hole course is lit up at night, so we love to play then, Jasmine says. They have these 9-and-dine events that make it so easy to meet people. The couple also enjoy wine tastings with the wine club and dinners with food and wine pairings. While some things had to be pared down and moved outside because of COVID-19, there are still lots of activities and ways to make friends, Jasmine says. We had a Christmas parade where everyone decorated their golf carts that our neighborhood won. There are bunco groups and card games, and we've made a lot of deep friendships already. Active adult communities and golf course communities gained popularity during the pandemic because people feel safe within the bubble of their neighborhoods, Blake says. These are gated communities where you know everyone without any transient population, Blake says. Golf had a rebirth during the pandemic because people realized it was a good socially distant activity. The Joneses, who lived in California, Oregon, and Texas before settling in Gold Canyon, Arizona, about 15 years ago, were looking for a community for their retirement and to downsize from their 3,400-square-foot home. At first, we were worried about carrying 2 houses since we bought here before our previous home was sold, Jasmine says. We downsized and figured we'd live in the house for 2 years, then decide if we wanted to stay, but we realized almost right away that it was too small. Now the couple are living in a rented home while Shea Homes builds their new home, which is anticipated to be complete by the end of the summer. We found a lot that overlooks the golf course in Vulture Peak that had a slight price cut because it was nearly in the pandemic, so it felt like the stars aligned for us, Jasmine says. Now the community is selling so fast that prices are going up by $5,000 every week. Most of the homes at Wickenburg Ranch, which average $450,000, are open either to the desert or to landscaped open space that complements the desert, Haynes says. Some have a golf course view. Most homes here have a backyard and ample side space on either side of the house, Haynes says. Buyers want a detached home with a nice lot, but not too much land. They don't want to spend their time and money on maintenance. Although residents are responsible for maintaining the yards, Haynes says the minimalist desert landscaping eliminates the need for cutting grass or extensive gardening. Shea Homes and Dorn Homes are building homes priced from the upper $200,000 to $600,000 and above that range in size from 1,342 to 3,249 square feet. Homes are available with garage parking for 2 to 5 cars, and some garages can accommodate an RV. For the Joneses, settling in the desert, far from the city lights, offers exactly what they hope for when they retire, a peaceful country life surrounded by natural beauty and close friends. As we continue to enjoy spring, we also find ourselves in the midst of what's known as the wedding season. Many I do's are spoken during the months of April, May, and June, with the latter sometimes called the wedding month. With weddings come honeymoons. As writer Alicia Prakash of Oyster.com discovered, some honeymoons are very special when they are found in all-inclusive resorts. Her article appeared in the March 28, 2021 issue of the News and Observer. There's no denying that the best part after seeing your I do's is the honeymoon. Well, that and spending the rest of your life together. Even better is having everything taken care of while on vacation. No matter the destination, an all-inclusive resort takes the worries out of travel. We rounded up a list of romantic honeymoon-worthy all-inclusive hotels around the world, from the Maldives to Botswana. Now, the first one is the Gili Lakanfushi Maldives. The overwater bungalows have outdoor decks with gorgeous views, bare feet are encouraged, and each guest is pampered by a personal butler. Newlyweds can partake in activities including yoga, kayaking, windsurfing, canoeing, sailing for free, and excursions like deep-sea fishing and snorkeling can also be arranged. Plus, the island is surrounded by beautiful white sand beaches, so couples can relax all day, every day. The second location, Fowl Cay Resort, Bahamas. With a 28-guest capacity, the hotel makes newlyweds feel like they have the place almost to themselves. Following a boat ride from the airport, guests can enjoy three private beaches, free kayaks and snorkeling gear, and personal boats for daily excursions. Six 1-3-bedroom villas with water views await. That said, this level of luxury is reflected in the nightly rates. Number 3, Jade Mountain Resort, St. Lucia. Jade Mountain Resort is one of the most romantic hotels in the Caribbean, thanks to its incredible Piton views. The ride to the resort can be rough, but the doting service, hushed ambiance, no TVs or children allowed, and open-air restaurant make it all worthwhile. The suites, referred to as sanctuaries, are a real treat, too. Through an open fourth wall, each enormous room overlooks the sea. Some rooms even have private in-room infinity pools for soaking with your sweetheart. The closest beach is a short shuttle ride or hike away. Next is we have the Tadre Island Resort, Fiji. Located in the Mamanuka Islands, this adults-only hotel ensures that honeymooners and couples can enjoy some R&R without wailing kids. Hole up with your honey in one of the villas. All feature private terraces with small plunge pools facing the ocean. Indulge in free activities like kayaking, fishing, hiking, snorkeling, and sailing. Chill out on the beach or in the beautiful infinity pool, or take in the views. Every angle of Tadre faces the turquoise sea. Four Seasons Tented Camp Golden Triangle is found in Thailand. Despite its jungle location and only being accessible by boat, this all-inclusive resort is not lacking in luxury. The hotel has a lovely open-air spa, luxury tents with antique-style bathtubs, and outdoor rainfall showers. There's also a small pool in the forest. A minimum two-night stay is required, though you'll be wishing you could stay forever. The Caves, Jamaica. With private cottages and suites set along the dramatic seaside cliffs, this resort ticks all the boxes for a premier honeymoon. Romantic, upscale, and intimate. Kids under 16 aren't allowed, plus added perks include a private jacuzzi and romantic candlelight dinners for two inside a cave. However, a stay here doesn't come cheap, and they do not provide prices, so you'll just have to imagine what they must be. Number 7 is the Secrets Maroma Beach Riviera Cancun, Mexico. Set on private white sand beaches, this adults-only resort secluded location makes it one of our top picks in Mexico for honeymooners. In addition to the buffet, couples have a range of high-quality dining options, including French cuisine and romantic dinners for two on the beach. The latter cost extra, by the way. More to fall in love with, full-service spa with couples treatment on the beach, several swimming pools, and water sports like kayaking and snorkeling. Then we have Zoetri Aqua Punta Cana. This is in the Dominican Republic. Zoetri aquapunicana is a honeymoon perfect as it gets. An uncrowded white sand beach, spacious suites, a pristine pool, gorgeous spa, and free on-site activities like yoga, snorkeling, and a horseback riding session. The atmosphere is serene thanks in part to a difficult-to-reach location and a lack of kid-friendly amenities. Next is Los Altos del Hierros in Costa Rica. Set on a mountaintop and accessed via a steep, rocky road, this upscale adults-only boutique hotel is fairly isolated, and that's part of the appeal. The other part of the draw is its rustic full-service spa, free daily yoga classes, an open-air fitness facility, and free-form pool. And then we have the Constance Mufishi in the Maldives. The Constance Mufishi Resort is within 30 minutes of the world's best dive spots and has an excellent house reef. Along with an idyllic beach, a stay here includes non-motorized water sports, including windsurfing, kayaking, snorkeling, pedal boats, or catamaran cruises. Guest, the 110 rustic chic rooms are sophisticated, artistic, and feature stunning sea views. Some are even directly over the water. I should like to wake up and think you're stepping out into the sea, What icons come to mind when you think of Washington, D.C.? Maybe it's the Capitol? How about the White House? Or maybe the Smithsonian? Well, these are among the more popular sites that make our nation's capital a popular tourist attraction. But there are many other places to see and visit in the D.C. area besides some of the better-known landmarks. Case in point is Washington Post writer Fritz Hahn's recent article, How to Make the Most of the National Arboretum. Now, it appeared in the April 16, 2021 weekend extra edition of the News and Observer. And let's see how the National Arboretum might be worth taking some time to visit, okay? The National Arboretum is a place full of contradictions. It was established by Congress in 1927 as part of the U.S. Agriculture Department for purposes of research and education concerning tree and plant life. 94 years later, scientists still work in its greenhouses and open fields, while generations of Washingtonians have adopted it as a government-owned city park, a place to sit under trees with friends or take kids to ride bikes. At 446 acres, it's one of Washington's largest green spaces, but it's cut off from the city by multi-lane commuter routes on two sides and the Anacostia River on another. It regularly turns up on listiles for D.C. hidden gems, but the National Capitol columns, which featured on the east portico of the Capitol from 1828 to 1958 and were placed in the Arboretum in 1990, are included in just about every Instagrammable Places in D.C. roundup online. And yes, the columns are a wondrous thing, evocative of the ruins of an ancient temple placed in the wild Ellipse Meadow. They make such a stunning backdrop that the Arboretum requires professional photographers to apply for permits in the hopes of managing the endless engagement, graduation, fashion photo shoots. But there's so much more to see at the Arboretum than old sandstone. With warm weather bringing the blooming of magnolias, dogwoods, cherries, and azaleas, it seemed like a good time to go back to the great outdoors and take a closer look at the Arboretum. The facility itself remains affected by the coronavirus. The National Bonsai and Pinjing Museum and the Washington Youth Garden remain closed, as does the bucolic Fern Valley, where the pathways are just too narrow for social distancing. But we spoke to horticulturalists, birders, and the friends of the National Arboretum to find out where we should be exploring right now and in the weeks ahead. It turns out we are just in time. Visitor numbers have been booming in recent weeks, and if they keep climbing to the point where social distancing is difficult, the Arboretum may again begin to restrict the number of people allowed on the grounds, as it did last summer. Visiting before or after work rather than on a weekend remains the best advice, but there's really no bad time to take advantage of this amazing resource. The Asian Collections. Occupying the easternmost edge of the Arboretum, the Asian Collection fills a scenic landscape that slopes down toward the Anacostia River. Gravel paths and stone steps wind past valleys of shrubs and evergreens, leading to terraces with peaceful benches where you can pause and admire the views of flower-covered hillsides as well as the river. It's one of the more romantic sections of the Arboretum. Different sections are named for the plant's countries of origin. Japanese woodland, Korean hillside, China Valley, stitched together harmoniously as you navigate the trails, which can be twisting and steep. A highlight is a Chinese-style pagoda, which looks out over the Chinese and Asian valleys and can also be busy with groups taking photos. At the end of the trail, closest to the parking lot, is a glen of brightly colored camellias. Their beauty is a tribute to the Arboretum's scientific mission. Harsh winters in the 1970s killed 941 of the Arboretum's 956 camellia plants. A National Arboretum scientist named William Ackerman began breeding the hardy survivors with other camellias, seeking to find one that could survive this region's cold temperatures, and ultimately created more than 50 new hybrids, including a number that still bloom here. Now, how about cherry blossoms? Peak bloom for the Tidal Basin's cherry blossoms arrived earlier this week, and that would have been the week of April 5th. And with any luck, they might stick around for 7 to 10 days after that, depending on conditions. But at the Arboretum, home to more than 70 varieties of cherry tree, some ornamental cherries flowered more than a week before the blossoms downtown, and others have yet to reach their peak. Cherry blossoms are planted in multiple areas throughout the Arboretum, sometimes alongside other flowering Japanese fruit trees. Beyond keeping an eye out for white, coral, or rose-colored petals as you stroll through the grounds, take a look at the self-guided cherry blossom tour on the Arboretum app. The research fields in Valley Road near the parking lot are home to sun-dappled grove of trees collected in Japan, experimental hybrids, and trees used for breeding and preservation purposes. Next, we have the Crepe Myrtle Nursery and Research Nursery 6. If there's an area that demonstrates how easy it is to miss some of the amazing plants of the Arboretum, it might be these adjacent research fields located between Meadow Road and Valley Road. It's a very, very beautiful spot, says botanist Kevin Conrad, the curator of the Arboretum's Woody Plant Landscape Germplasm Repository. To sit underneath some of those incredibly old and stunningly beautiful crepe myrtles is really a horticultural experience. It's a plant that is exquisite from many perspectives. You might think you've seen a few crepe myrtles in your neighborhood. They're not like this example of the Lagerstromia ferrei, which the Arboretum has given the accession number 10,536P. This tree is an original from the John Creech expedition in Japan to the 50s, where he collected his tree and brought it back, and he used it in the creation of numerous hybrids resistant to powdery mildew, such as Natchez and Arapaho. It's not labeled, Conrad says, but it's hard to miss. The tree is 30 feet tall by 30 feet wide, wow, with a trunk that's got to be 2 feet in diameter. The bark is dark, with brown and blackish mottling throughout. It's incredible, he says. Then we have the Dawn Redwoods. Across from the entrance to the Gatelli Conifer Collection, clustered on a triangle-shaped island between two roads, is a stand of tall, skinny trees with flared bases and knobby roots. They exude age and nobility. You have to crane your neck to see the crowns. These are Dawn Redwoods, which fossil records tell us grew across Europe and North America millions of years ago. But then they became extinct, or so biologists once thought. In the 1940s, a researcher in central China's Hubei province began examining some unusual old trees, and in 1946, Chinese botanists announced the genus Matsukuoka that had been rediscovered. Seeds made their way around the world, including to the Arboretum, which acquired its seeds in May 1948. Just stand there and enjoy the moment, because you're in a grove of trees that were thought to be extinct, says Conrad. The grandeur of them, the buttressed trunks, the fact that they're in a grove really makes it a magical place. Next, we have the Dogwood Collections. Kathy Kirkham, the Director of Fundraising and Communications for the nonprofit Friends of the National Arboretum, knows what to do when she needs to take a break. She heads for the Dogwood Collections, perched in the upper northeast corner of the grounds, far from the popular areas. When the dogwoods come out and they're in full bloom, there's every color you can imagine, she says. It's just a fairy tale back there. But now, before the dogwoods blossom, might be the best time of all. There is a little secret pavilion in the woods called the Anacostia Overlook, Kirkham says. You can sit in that little pavilion, and you're up on a precipice, looking down over the Anacostia River. And sometimes you can see the eagles hunting. It's not that you should ignore the flowering trees and the long grassy allee that leads from the entrance down to an ornamental fountain, but this tranquil perch overlooking a bend in the river is worth seeking out. Then we have the Gotelli conifer collection. On the occasions when you think about conifers, Christmas trees are probably the first things to come to mind, or possibly a scenic pine forest with a needle-strewn floor. The Gotelli conifer collection is proof of just how much more there is out there. Shortly after wandering into the conifer area, you're staring at a stunning seafoam green Atlas cedar that resembles a spiky mop of a weeping willow, a dwarf blue spruce the size and shape of a small boulder, and trees whose needles are icy blue, sunset gold, or electric lime green. The contrast in shape, texture, and color are most striking when you can take a step back to compare, so take a moment to pause in an attractive hillside pagoda or at one of the wooden benches along the grassy paths. William Gotelli, a private collector who assembled 1,500 conifers for his New Jersey home, donated his treasures to the Arboretum in 1962. What makes this section so enjoyable to browse is the layout, with the conifers arrayed in a gravel or rock-lined bed, along with a mix of ground cover, flowers, and smaller shrubs. Row after row of evergreens might blur together. This arrangement gives plants space to breathe and lets the trees and shrubs shine in all their hues. Next is the Morrison Garden. Azaleas have flowered on the slopes of Mount Hamilton, the highest point on the Arboretum ground, since the late 1940s, thanks to Benjamin Y. Morrison, the first director of the Arboretum. Morrison was devoted to the idea of breeding large, colorful hybrid azaleas that could survive mid-Atlantic winters. The wide variations in colors and shapes, far different from the azaleas on display in most suburban yards, draw crowds of azalea lovers to the trails of Mount Hamilton during the blooming season, which begins in late April and early May. But year-round, there's a calm to be found in the Morrison Garden, a brick-walled formal garden at the base of the mountain. Rows of Morrison's hybrid Glendale azaleas, named for the Maryland town where Morrison did much of his research at a USDA facility, feature vivid colors and unusual stripes, providing a startling contrast to boxwood hedges and a shaded brick path leading to a large, ornate pottery planter. A solitary bench under a trellis provides a view up the mountain, which rises to 240 feet above sea level, and pops of color from the floral plantings there. On the way out, take notice of the Chinese lace bark pine tree, whose exquisite bark is mottled with abstract silver, white, and gray blotches, as engaging as an impressionist painting. And our final stop in the National Arboretum is Springhouse Run. For a glimpse of the Arboretum's past and how land can be transformed, there's no better area than the stretch of water called Springhouse Run. Beginning in the early 20th century, this section of the ground stretching south from Route 50 and the Arboretum gates was home to bottled water operation, two conical brick springhouses to give the creek its name are still visible, and a brick manufacturing facility, which closed in the 1970s but left the kilns that can be seen from the New York Avenue northeast. So there you go. A trip to the National Arboretum to finish our journey on today's Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be with us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Questions and comments can be directed to 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.